Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Global tensions felt at home and challenges with travel. Happy St. Patrick's Day weekend. Is there a pot of gold we can talk about? Glad to have you here. I'm Joe Krause, Chief Economic Strategist. Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, that's exactly right. Iran all day, every day. And that's where we have to start, Brian. The fact that the Straits of Hormuz, where, as we all know, a lot of energy goes through, and it's just not oil that goes through. 20% of the world's crude oil goes through that straits, but so does LNG and ammonia, all these things that you need to make fertilizers, that goes through as well. And so it is an issue. However, the federal government tried to mitigate some of this risk by releasing some of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. I think it got a big yawn, don't you think?
Yeah, it was interesting, the market reaction. The International Energy Agency, so they coordinated amongst all of these various governments to release 400 million barrels. That is the largest ever. And when you think about the Strait of Hormuz, I think some estimates are it's like 15 to 20 million barrels go through that. And so, you know, that's like a 20 days worth of supply. That seems like it should have probably moved the markets, but maybe it's the expectation that there's a little bit more to this than just the flow right now. If it's more protracted, will it extend beyond the 20 days? I personally kind of take President Trump at his word when at the outset he said 4 to 5 weeks, and he's saying that it's getting closer. And so in a way, I'm kind of thinking that the market is maybe thinking that this is going to persist a lot longer than what I believe it might.
Do you think any of this is perception? Like the fact that they released the Strategic Petroleum, or they can release the Strategic Petroleum, and as you point out, will it really move the needle over time? What is it? What is really happening here? And it's all about how long this is going to take. Of course, nobody knows what surprises lie in front of us, but that's the reason why we have to have this conversation. And fortunately, you and I talked about this probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, that what is in front of us is a potential issue in Iran, and number two, the private credit issue. Both of those are upon us at the same time.
Yeah, and they really do come together if you think about the financial stresses that can arise, and does it make it worse in this a little bit more opaque market called private credit. But in terms
So let's explain what that is.
Sure. So private credit is really in contrast to public credit, which isn't all that helpful. But if you think about the bonds that you can buy in the open market, you typically find these in exchange-traded funds, mutual funds, and these are typically called public credit. Now, private credit is where basically you have these companies, these funds that make direct loans to businesses. So instead of going to a bank, you go to a business that is going to cut you a check. And sometimes they're structured in very interesting ways. It really became more popular coming out of the global financial crisis because of a lot of the regulation, meaning that smaller businesses found it hard to get approved for loans at banks.
And that's exactly right. So post Dodd-Frank, which was, you know, came out of the great financial crisis. To me, this kind of shadow financial banking system came out of that. And so they're making loans that the banks wouldn't do, right? And so now it's turned out to be a pretty significant amount. You know, private equity is about $9 trillion and private debt's about $2.5 trillion, somewhere in that ballpark. It's significant, but it's not systemic.
I love that phrasing. Yes, it's significant, but not systemic because of the size of it. Now, that's not to say that it's not an issue for the people who are investing in them. And that's why we fundamentally believe, know what you own, why do you own it, and how much are you paying for it? Because there's a lot of due diligence that's required to really understand how are the managers, the ones making these loans, making them? What are the standards that they have? What's the quality of the loans. And a lot of the problems really started with a company that was making a ton of loans, perhaps lower quality, to these companies that were software as a service, right? So the idea is kind of, I guess it would be asset light, really based on the programming. And all of a sudden, artificial intelligence comes along. Anybody can vibe code some of this stuff, allegedly. And so it suddenly draws into concern the viability of the businesses that the loans are being made to. Now, these private credit funds are set up such that they can gate or throttle the number of people who can redeem their money in any given quarter. Oftentimes, it's a 5% cap.
Is that interesting, Joe? So now you want to go, you remember the movie It's a Wonderful Life?
When yes.
There was mm-hmm. basically a run on the bank, right? And Jimmy Stewart said, the money's not here. It's in her house, in his house. Do you remember that
That's
scene?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So what Brian is talking about is really where people, and usually institutions, are going back to these private credit and saying, give me my dough back. And they're gating or fencing it and only allowing a percentage out.
Yeah, unlike in banks where you have FDIC insurance, right? Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. You also have a lender of last resort function from the Federal Reserve. These private credit funds don't have either one of those. Really interesting twist was one of the funds, the very large one, the senior management, they ponied up some of the money to meet the redemption request just to really, I think, underscore their confidence in the loans they were making, because they can't just all of a sudden go out and tell a small business, oh, you have to pay back all that money, right? It might be like a 7-year loan. It might be floating rate. And so these are less liquid. And that's why the vehicle itself does have these almost fire breaks built into it to throttle the amount that can be redeemed from it, because they don't want to have to sell these loans at fire sale prices.
And here's the flip side of that, though. Some of the really massive underwriters like Apollo have written these loans down to zero.
Yeah.
Right. So there is the other side of this argument. So there is this thing brewing at the same time. So we have Iran, obviously, in front of us. We have this private credit issue in front of us. The flip side is earnings were really good. The GDP is growing. Yeah. Interest rates might come down.
Yeah.
And people are getting their tax refunds back.
Absolutely. You look at the tax refund season, and it's actually going a lot better than, say, last year's in terms of the dollar amount. Part of that was because the IRS didn't uphold the withholding table, so people maybe overwithheld last year, and now they're seeing that money come back. That could support some discretionary spending, also what we would call balance sheet repair. So if you have high credit card debt, you get a tax refund. Maybe you can pay that back. Yeah, it's really interesting how the fundamentals of the U.S. economy do still seem to be quite intact, despite these big risks, the private credit and then the Middle East. These are things that people worry about. And as you've talked about for many years, markets like to climb that wall of worry. There's always something to worry about. And then when the worst case scenario doesn't actually come to fruition, all of a sudden you see another repricing in the markets.
Click the Get Started button at annexwealth.com. Connect with us in person. You're hearing us right now, but you can see us too. New videos on our social media include the new Trump accounts coming in summer. You're going to hear a lot about that. Rate cuts with a new Fed chair announced, and how to balance spending with larger tax refunds like we were just talking about. It's a whole team who has your best interest in mind on your side with a holistic approach at Annex Wealth Management. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. You might have seen this in recent headlines, been in a few different articles. More Americans are dipping into their retirement accounts as financial pressures continue to rise. Even though balances have grown in recent years, workers are increasingly turning to hardship withdrawals and loans to cover immediate expenses. This is a trend that raises some questions about financial resilience and maybe some long-term impact on retirement security. So that's a good thing that Tom Parks is here. He's the Director of Retirement Plan Services at Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for being on the show, Tom.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
So what do you think is driving this surge in 401k withdrawals right now? Because this is something you and your team have been tracking.
Right. This is changing all the time. So I think one of the things is there are more people who have 401ks now than ever. So the fact that there are more people who have a 401k means there are more people who can withdraw from 401k. So just simple math thing. But the other is the SECURE legislation and SECURE 2.0. Congress made it easier for people to access 401k money before retirement. That is also contributing to this increase, I think, in people accessing. So combination of factors here.
Yeah, so penalty free, you take it out maybe because of something circumstantial, and then you're thinking, okay, well, now my circumstantial situation is over. I still have more money to withdraw, and maybe you get that number in front of you and get excited about
it. Well, there's social medias out there. People are giving all sorts of crazy advice on social media, but they'll say things, make factual statements about how now you have access to when you didn't before without getting into the details and the ramifications and stuff. So then I think people have it in their head that, oh, here's this new pile of money to which I have access that I didn't before. And once that idea gets in your head, we see what happens here.
So what kind of long-term damage can maybe a hardship withdrawal cause to retirement savings? Because we talked about the circumstantial situations, mm-hmm. but can you catch back up?
Right. You're asking hardship withdrawals. So there are legitimate hardships and reasons people need to access money. So I'm not giving people a hard time for being in those situations. Obviously, it would be better if you weren't in it. But the long-term effect on your retirement. The younger you are, the more it's going to affect you because you have taken money out of that long-term compounding game. The closer you get to retirement, the less, I would say, of a longer-term impact it will have just because now that money doesn't have as long to grow. I always tell people there are lots of really good places to save money. So 529 accounts are great for saving for college. You've got HSAs, awesome, for saving for health expenses. An emergency fund is a great place to save money for if you have an emergency. A 401k account, in my eyes, is to save for retirement. It has a very specific purpose. And what has happened is a combination of legislation and then just trends in our industry of 401k providers are adding emergency savings accounts and they're adding these other things. It's mission creep is kind of how I look at it. And people, when they look at their 401k, they don't just see a retirement vehicle anymore. They see a piggy bank. That trend is very troublesome to me. You know, as it pertains to the long-term impact, the younger you are, the more exponential that impact becomes over the long term. And younger people tend not to think of, I know, I wasn't thinking about that when I was, you know.
401k, that's not fun.
I started in this industry when I was 25, and even then, I've been immersed in it for 25 years, and I'm not going to pretend that I was thinking that far ahead.
I thought, hey, I have all this time.
Right. Exactly. That, I think, is really contributing to some of the stuff that we're talking about.
Also depends with the hardship withdrawals, how much you're taking out.
Oh, for sure. So there are some things that, you know, there's a $1,000, you know, every 3 years penalty free. So that's kind of different from the traditional hardship withdrawal. One of the things that we were looking at in one of the articles, they were talking about the reasons that people were taking out hardship withdrawals. Prevention of eviction or foreclosure was at the top of the list. That's kind of concerning. Medical expenses were another one. That one is not surprising. And again, if you incur a medical expense, you know, what are you going to do? That happens. And so if more and more people are taking out the money to prevent foreclosure or eviction, that's concerning because then that means this is really kind of a last resort. Once this money's gone, now what's to prevent that foreclosure from happening 18 months from now? Now this resource, the safety net, is no longer there for you.
Nice round number, $100,000 in front of my face, and I'm looking at my 401k account. What would be the penalty of taking out $20,000?
Sure. So there is a 10% early withdrawal penalty for most hardship withdrawals. And then you have to pay the income taxes on top of it. With most 401k distributions, there is a mandatory 20% withholding. That is not the case for hardship withdrawals. And so adding insult to injury, you take out the hardship withdrawal because you have a legitimate hardship. Then come tax time, you owe 10% on that money that you took out plus the income tax. And then presumably you're not in a great financial position or you wouldn't have taken out the hardship withdrawal in the first place. It's a really pernicious cycle that you can get into with this stuff.
So we're realizing it might not be a good idea, maybe in some cases for a quick fix, but what should people do instead of raiding their 401ks?
This is why we focus so much on our team on financial wellness education, trying to get people so that they don't find themselves in this position in the first place. Prevention is the best medicine for this. Once you find yourself in this situation, take the smallest hardship withdrawal as I can, you know, that kind of situation.
Director of Retirement Plan Services at Annex Wealth Management, Tom Parks, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click the Get Started button at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk The Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, we've had several events in multiple locations this month, so thank you if you've joined us. Our Instant Insight series continues. There's been a lot to cover. The Fed and the markets, that's this Wednesday, March 18th at 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern. How the Fed's decisions might affect you and ways to stay informed and trust your financial plan. We love taking your questions live. Click the events tab at the top of the page at annexwealth.com. That's going to set up your reminder. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and we've been kind of watching McDonald's and Dollar General. That's been in the news this past week.
Yeah, it was really interesting, some of the announcements that came out from both of them. So Dollar General, they reported their earnings. It was better than expected. They've been gathering market share from higher price retailers. So that's not really a big surprise. But what was really interesting is just the CEO's comments about how this has almost transformed their business model going forward, where they've learned that they can still sell to their typical bread and butter, lower income, middle income individuals, oftentimes lower dollar price, somewhat lower margin, but also appeal to higher income individuals. It's almost like people learned that, oh, okay, if I want to cut some of my budget, I can go shop there. And they discovered that they actually do have some things that maybe they want to buy. And a lot of those are higher ticket price items with higher margins.
And you look at some of the things that people have bought are the higher ticket price items, because you hear Dollar General, you think that everything's a dollar. It's not. Some things are $10. The elegant glass dispenser that you would use for lemonade is a very higher priced item that people buy. It's popular.
Yeah. And those typically come with a higher margin. And it's somewhat similar with like McDonald's, the story there. They announced that they were going to be launching, really digging into their value meal, because back in November, they saw that lower income individuals, you had sales declines of like double digits. But then higher income individuals were starting to eat there more. So you saw an actual increase there. So now they're trying to, I think, appeal to both markets. You probably saw the CEO, that big Arch Burger thing, right? Which is a premium product, higher margins, but then also you have the value meals. So they're leaning into like, what can you give people that's $3 or under, or a $4 breakfast meal? For a while, they've actually been subsidizing a number of their franchisees. So at the corporate level, they will subsidize it to allow the franchisees to offer these lower prices.
And I know you like the fancy words. McFlation is something that I heard.
That is a very interesting one. McFlation. I have not heard that one. I'll have to put that in the back of my brain to pull it out at some party.
And did we realize how long salads have been gone from McDonald's? They've been gone for years.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Well, think about the cost associated with it, the space it takes up as well. I mean, those were kind of high costs. It was one of those things where, okay, let's appeal to people who are a little bit more health conscious. But then you also looked at the nutritional content. They weren't that much better exactly. than anything else that was
they
on their menu.
They were delicious, though. Financial planning at every level, Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, and Annex Ignite. 9 total locations. And another reminder, just because these events are popular, leverage your health as your greatest wealth. Women in Wealth in person. That is this coming Wednesday, March 18th from 9 until noon. It's an Annex Expo at our Brookfield headquarters. Community members talking about the goals of aging in place and retiring and enjoying your wealth on your terms. You can reserve your spot at annexwealth.com. Glad you're here. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and we've had a lot of downloadables on our brand new website at annexwealth.com. You can just click on the Learning Center. 7 retirement planning mistakes you make in your 50s, and also the Annex Asset Almanac, which you had a lot to do with.
Yeah, the Asset Almanac is something that we update on an annual basis, and it's really taking that longer-term view of the financial markets as far as maybe helping to shape expectations for risks. So the volatilities, the ups and downs, and then also the opportunities, which is, you know, is just historically what has been the total return of, say, for example, the S&P 500 or government bonds, right? So looking back as far as we can in history to really get that perspective around risks and returns. And then also the importance of some what we think are key lessons, the importance of patience, because you can have long periods of time, multiple years, where stocks don't return positive numbers. You can also have negative returns for bonds. But over the longer haul, if you have that longer horizon, just stocks historically have been the place to be in order to help grow your wealth. We also wanted to highlight the other important principle, which is diversification. So when you mix stocks with bonds, you oftentimes get a little bit smoother ride. You might have to give up a little bit in terms of the return, but maybe the lower volatility, the lower probability of having bigger drawdowns, you know, going from peak to trough, maybe that's enough to make up for some of that reduced return that you might get by mixing the two of them.
It means more in retirement when you're taking those distributions. And so that's why we have these 7 retirement planning mistakes you make in your 50s that you can download. Common pitfalls to avoid. What are a couple of the pitfalls you think people should avoid in retirement? A
couple of them come off the bat. Number one is not staying active. In terms of socially engaged, physically engaged, spiritually engaged. That's one of the things that I've seen with some people is that they just kind of go into retirement and then they don't necessarily go out and about.
The lack of structure.
Yeah, exactly. The lack of structure can be really, I think, disconcerting for a number of people. Another thing, trying to spend more. You are almost penny wise, but pound foolish, I think is the way that Ben Franklin referred to it, right? You might do a really good job budgeting and couponing and all that. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, let's just randomly take a trip that you didn't plan for, right? Or splurge on something else. And so I think it's really important to have that honest conversation with a wealth manager about what are your plans and get a budget and try to stick to it.
If you're retired, maybe you can do a St. Patrick's Day celebration this weekend. Americans expected to spend a record $7.7 billion on St. Patrick's Day in 2026. Now, maybe you have a little bit of extra income. You can go to one of those Dollar General stores we were talking about and maybe get some of the seasonal stuff. Dr. Brian Jacobson, thank you. If you have a question, there is an Ask Annex button right at the top of the page at annexwealth.com. Answers to all of those questions are in quick video form on our social media, especially our LinkedIn page. If you miss some of our TV and radio appearances during the week talking about how we help clients adjust to the current market conditions, that's where you can see and hear clips from those appearances and tax resources, our Women in Wealth page, including our new Women in Wealth podcast that we just launched. That's all at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. As you start preparing or are looking at over your finished Wisconsin state tax return, you might notice that your tax liability looks a little different than prior years. The new Wisconsin retirement income subtraction could be the reason, and in 2025, Wisconsin passed legislation that added a new subtraction for state retirement income, and it could be generous for some people. And Arabella Parents is a financial planning specialist at Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for being on the show again, Arabella.
Thank you.
What does this mean? Because you've seen a lot of this already for Wisconsin taxpayers. What age does it start to matter for most people?
So officially starting in 2025, Wisconsin residents who are age 67 and older, they can now subtract up to $24,000 of qualifying retirement income from their state taxable income. So this is on a per spouse basis, so up to $48,000 total for some households in which both spouses are over that age of 67. And really, this benefits retirees through a reduction in their taxable income. And it's funny because this is the first time a lot of people have heard of this subtraction. So up to $48,000 for two spouses. And this applies for even high earners. There is no income limitation this time. So it's really helping us be more generous to those retirees who are living on retirement income.
We like that word, generous. Now, what about qualifying retirement income? What kind of income counts for this subtraction?
So these are your typical qualified retirement plans like 401ks, IRAs, and pensions. As long as your retirement income is taxable in the state of Wisconsin, it can count. So I want to note possibly the most common instance in which something doesn't count. It's your Social Security income, because that is not taxable in the state of Wisconsin. So your Social Security income does not count towards this retirement income subtraction. However, all of your IRAs, 401ks, pensions, other retirement income does count here. So I want to walk us through an example here. So we have Robert and Mary Johnson. Very classic Wisconsinite names.
Somebody
here,
might be listening saying, hey, that's me. No, this is just an example.
Yeah. So Robert and Mary, because they are both over the age of 67, they're 68 in this example, and they're taking over $24,000 of IRA distributions. They're taking $30,000 in this example. They will be able to qualify for that full $48,000 subtraction. So it functions similarly to a deduction on your federal side. The subtraction just means that your income that is taxable is lowered by that amount. They would be able to save a pretty decent amount on their taxes, their ultimate taxable income, by having their total income lowered by that $48,000.
And if people are doing the math in their head, do both spouses need at least $24,000 of income each to qualify?
So the answer here is no. Going back to our example of Robert and Mary Johnson, Robert takes $50,000 of IRA distributions this time. Mary takes none. In this instance, they would actually still qualify for that full $48,000 of the Wisconsin retirement income subtraction, just because they have at least $48,000 total within their household, and both spouses still qualify age-wise. So if Mary didn't qualify age-wise, it would just be Robert who could take that $24,000. But as long as they're both age and at least somebody has that enough income to qualify for the full amount, any amount of income that they have would be able to then qualify for that.
This is key for Wisconsin taxpayers. Do you think a lot of people are missing this?
So it's something that can be really easy to miss if you're not aware of it, you're not watching out for it. It's kind of hidden within your Schedule SB on your tax, your Wisconsin tax return. It's important to really look over, make sure that if you have retirement income, considering whether or not you might be qualifying for it. Are you over age 67? Do you have this? Mm-hmm. And there is another big consideration here that I want to bring up. There's a caveat in that claiming this subtraction makes you ineligible to take a number of Wisconsin credits. So this would include your school property tax credit, the married couples credit, and possibly a big one is that itemized deduction credit. It's really an either or, and you're weighing the benefits of, do I take the subtraction, which means you have less taxable income that you're calculating the tax on, or are you taking the credits, which is a dollar for dollar reduction of the tax that you owe?
Maybe you could start planning for next year.
Right, of course. So once we found out that this new legislation was passing, and once it had passed, you know, really doing that planning, because it does lower your taxable income. And so it can be helpful to plan ahead, and maybe you need less estimated payments. Maybe you need to withhold less because there is less of a tax liability as a result of this deduction that you may not have had in the past. So really here at Annex, when we're looking at and planning around our clients' tax returns, we're really looking and calculating and projecting out, you know, how much of this deduction would they qualify for, as well as, you know, what credits are we projecting them to be eligible for, which is higher, and really giving recommendations for the amounts that they should pay, the amounts that they potentially could owe. So that's really the importance of tax planning and the value that that can be provided. And so you want to make sure that you're thinking about that ahead of time, because, you know, you don't always want a very large refund, even though it might feel nice at the time.
Arabella Perrins, financial planning specialist at Annex Wealth Management, thank you so much for reminding us to look out for that on our taxes.
Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click that Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, glad you're here with us on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. This is also a free podcast on demand, so you can get this episode right at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, along with our other podcasts. If you are currently a client or thinking about seeing how Annex can help you, take a look at our very active YouTube channel. It can certainly give you a good idea of how we build content every day with our holistic approach to your financial life. And the Annex LinkedIn page stage with the latest financial trends, the events we have coming up, been a busy March already, reacting to the latest financial news, and the Axiom. That is our newsletter with our week in review video from this show in your email on Sunday morning. Just search Annex Axiom. The other podcasts like The Wealthiest, Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America, some people you might know in some of those episodes, and the SWOT podcast, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with new episode first thing Monday morning. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, for sure. What we put together this week gets into the Axiom on Sunday, so folks, do sign up for that because parts of our show go into that. But this section should be pretty easy because you and I are just going to chat about some economic history, so
yeah,
part of your PhD, and so that'll come right out. But I guess I want to start with the fact that people are comparing what could happen in Iran to other conflicts. And back when George W. Bush went over there, he had Don Rumsfeld in his ear saying, let's try to make this a place for a democracy, right? And that's not what Trump is trying to do.
Yep.
And so that is part of that. I think the scenario is different. But what I want to focus on is, and you and I talked about this week, is there has been oil similarities in the last 40 or 50 years, probably starting with the oil embargo back in 1973.
Yeah, so 1973, if you remember, basically a lot of countries in the Middle East decided that they're going to embargo sending oil to the United States. Back then, we were a massive importer of oil, so now we're an exporter, a little bit different setup there. But that sent gas prices through the roof. And if you think about the background in terms of what was going on domestically with not just the economy, but policy. Very different than what we have today. So yes, we do have a price spike, so we are seeing that, but the context is so important because back then, Richard Nixon, he decided that he was going to impose price controls, and so that's where you had people queuing up in order to fill up their gas tanks. So prices didn't really adjust at the pump as much as what they probably otherwise would have, and it was also a really, really prolonged period of time in terms of the high oil prices. I mean, within 12 months, oil prices were still about like 200 to 300% higher than when that conflict began. So we are seeing an increase, yes, going from $60 a barrel, it went up to like almost 120 and then came back down. But the magnitude and the duration and also hopefully the policy context is very different today than back then.
And if you think about the fact that this still could be a supply shock, and it is a supply shock, right? Despite the fact that we have the Strategic Petroleum, that we're less dependent upon it. In fact, we are less dependent upon it than the rest of the world. So you could see issues around the rest of the world who truly need it much less than the United States. So what are you trying to do? Are you trying to make sure that there isn't the hands of a nuclear bomb in their hands? That's the argument, right? So maybe a regime change. But there is going to be fallout. For every action, there's a counter-reaction, right? And so we are likely to see higher defense spending. We're likely to see greater deficit spending and higher inflation because higher oil prices go right into the inflation calculation.
It does. And especially the Fed's favored measure of inflation, there's two major ones. There's the consumer price index that comes out early in the month. And then there's the personal consumption expenditure index that comes out a little bit later. And that actually came out on Friday. And it was running a little hotter than the CPI. That's because energy is a bigger part of that one than it is for the CPI. And that's just a function of PCE. It basically measures what people actually spend their money on, whereas CPI is based on a survey and they only update it like, you know, once a year or something like that. But what we're probably going to see, let's say inflation right now, 2.8%, getting above 3% again. And that puts the Fed in a little bit of a bind because they do know that the February jobs number was disappointing. It was a negative, but that was after a really big positive surprise in January. So maybe the truth is somewhere in between, right? But still, somewhat slower growth and then this rising inflation, albeit I think it's going to be temporary because once the conflict is over, we're probably going to see those oil prices drift, if not drop, back to where they were pre-conflict.
But Brian, we've had this conversation before. Generally, when you have inflation and it simmers down, you do get a second wave.
You do, yeah.
And maybe this is the second wave. How out of control it gets, it's certainly not good timing for the Republicans going into the midterm, right? But you could get a second run at this. And of course, that's going to put the Federal Reserve in a predicament because how do you lower interest rates when you've got inflation?
Yeah, and another wave, maybe this would be a third wave, could be with food prices, because with all the fertilizer that really goes through the Strait of Hormuz, a lot of it comes from natural gas, right? So the nitrogen, and as you mentioned at the top of the show, ammonia, all this stuff. So like 1/3 of the world's fertilizer goes through there. Well, if they're trying to do the planting or the spraying now, as far as the fertilizer, you won't see the effects until we actually go to the harvest and check out the quantity and the quality of the harvest there. So right now, the initial reaction could be with oil prices and gasoline prices, but there's likely going to be an echo when we get closer to August and harvest time.
And Brian, sometimes you use this fancy word called price dislocation. And so everything you just said is going to have price dislocation, which means there's an opportunity. So please explain your fancy word and then how we can take advantage of it.
Yeah. If we look at the short term, right, the market is going to react to the latest headlines. And I think oftentimes it overreacts either to the upside or to the downside. And that creates a lot of that volatility and the risk that some people are really uncomfortable with. And that's a good indicator that maybe you need to come in and talk to us to find out, is your portfolio aligned with your plan and with your risk tolerance as well? Because both are incredibly important, because what's the point of having a well thought out plan if you're not going to be able to stick to it when you see this volatility? But whenever we get these shocks, whether it's geopolitical or let's say it's a monetary policy shock or anything else, right, that suddenly sends prices moving. And really, if you think about the mechanics behind it, who's selling? It's the person who has the least confidence in the outlook. Who's buying is probably the person with the most confidence. So that's bound to create some of these swings. So I think that in this type of environment, it's really important to not overreact, not do it in an emotional way. One of the ways that we've been talking about it is humans are prone to feeling, acting, and then rationalizing.
Afterwards.
That's right. Exactly. It's after the fact. It's like, well, that's why I did it.
Shooting first and then aiming.
Kind of. Exactly.
So folks, if you're going to go through this process, we can help. We do it every day across all of our branches. It's a complimentary review of where you are today and how we can help you move forward.
It's easy to click that Get Started button at the new AnnexWealth.com, brand new website. Another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. If you missed some of it, the podcast is ready right now on the radio station website, or you can just search Annex Money Talk. For Dave Spano and Dr. Brian Jacobson, I'm Joe Krause. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.